Hello, I'm Preston Schlankofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disasters might affect you and your community. This week, we are speaking with Joe Weiss, a control systems cybersecurity expert. He is an expert in instrumentation, controls, and control system cybersecurity. He has published over 80 papers, chapters on cybersecurity for electric power substations engineering and securing water and wastewater systems. He's co-authored Cybersecurity Policy Guidebook and authored Protecting Industrial Control Systems from Electronic Threats. He has amassed a database of over 1,200 actual control system cyber incidents. He is an ISA Fellow, Managing Director of ISA 99, a Poneman Institute Fellow, and an IEEE Senior Member. He was featured in Richard Clark and R.P. Eddy's book, Warning, Finding Cassandras to Stop Catastrophes. He has patents on instrumentation, control systems, and OT networks. He is a registered professional engineer in the state of California and has CISM and CRISC certifications. It is an honor and a privilege to welcome Joe Weiss to Civil Defense Radio. Welcome, Joe. How you doing?
Pretty good. Preston, thank you for having me on. I much appreciate it.
It's our pleasure, Joe. We're associated through a national organization, and I get to hear your take on a variety of security issues on a weekly basis, just about. And I've learned a few things along the way, and I appreciate you for it.
Thank you.
Yes. So today we're going to be discussing the presidential executive order from May of 2020. And this is the second one that the administration has produced to secure our critical national infrastructure, specifically our bulk power system and components. So, Joe, can you give us a quick overview of what this executive order does and how it will help secure our grid through the control systems?
I will. And I just wanted to point out one thing before I start. I'm a control system engineer that got into cybersecurity. So my focus is not so much what's going on within the networks, because that's important. I'm much more concerned about what is that doing to the equipment that keeps lights on and water flowing. Because it's not the vulnerabilities, it's can they actually damage equipment, which could cause long extended outages. So I wanted to use that as kind of a preamble to why I was so interested and have been looking so deeply at the executive order. The executive order, there's a couple of things about it. Number one, it was done under a national emergency declaration, which basically says this is more than just something to consider and, you know, form a task force or whatever about. And this is coming from finding real issues where a nation state has implanted basically back doors into our equipment that we're using in our grids. Now, it's also unclear, number one, how widespread it is, and number two, if it's just the grid or if it's many other industries also suffering through this. But the overview of the executive order was really about the fact that today the U.S. no longer makes a lot of the large equipment that's used in the grid and elsewhere. And what's happened is that's then forced utilities and others to have to go overseas to buy equipment. And it turns out one of those places that still makes this large equipment is China. And so part of this is about, part of the executive order is about should we be buying this very large, very critical equipment, excuse me, from places like China that could be embedding backdoors or, you know, looking for control of our equipment essentially behind our backs? So the declaration, the National Emergency Declaration, is really trying to address the issue that we have a lot of equipment out there that's very critical that today can be coming from places that maybe we don't want it coming from. Mm. And by the way, the same thing can extend to small things like the whole 5G debate. So yeah. This is not, you know, when you're looking at this, you have to take it in its broader context.
Well, threats aren't usually pinpointed anyways. They're part of a broader spectrum of threats. And so you have to take your threat analysis in a broad spectrum in order to understand your true needs to defend yourself. And I think this is one of the things that we've been missing, and our coalition that we're a part of has been calling for this for quite a while, this and other changes. You know, one of the things when I read the prior executive order, I was going through this, and I read that executive order was from last year, and it was National Resilience to EMP and Electromagnetic Pulse. And so in Section 6AII, I found that it required the DHS to get back to the president within 1 year. And it just so happens that we are right about a one-year time frame. And I'm wondering, and you're in this business, I'm wondering if DHS found something significant that is the impetus for this latest bulk power targeted executive order.
Okay, as best as I can tell, number one, the executive order really came from equipment that was found, that was installed in at least one utility that actually had backdoors in it. So this is not directly, as best as I can tell, related to the EMP executive order.
Okay.
The other point being is, you know, EMP, electromagnetic pulse, is generally a function of, or at least is expected to be a function of, a, you know, a nuclear detonation. You know, the non-military part would be a solar storm, but the EMP is really from a nuclear detonation, which is something that's hopefully going to be very, very, very rare.
Right.
What's happening here, cyber, is something that is unfortunately happening every day.
Yes. Yeah.
So this becomes, you know, much more, and I think people don't realize that cyber is, like I say, it's a lot more than just corrupting data. Cyber can be used itself as a kinetic weapon. In other words, to actually damage or destroy physical equipment. And that is my concern with what was, if you will, the most likely impetus from this emergency executive order, is the back doors in this very critical equipment can be used, you know, to basically cause kinetic damage, real damage, as if you were walking in there with sticks of dynamite.
Wow. Yeah, that's a horrifying visual there. Why is security in our cyber control systems important? Which, you know, it goes without saying, but, you know, I'm sure you have a deeper understanding of it. But if it was so important, then why are they not built with those countermeasures already in their engineering?
Okay. Number one, obviously, it's a very good question. What you're running into is, if you will, a cultural problem that extends to this day. The first point is, for those people who don't know, what is a control system? Basically, a control system is anything that measures and then tries to take action with a process. The process can be, you have a pot of water. You know, you want to make sure the pot doesn't boil over. So you have to measure the temperature. And if the temperature gets too hot, then the control system turns the temperature down. If you're trying to boil the water and the water isn't boiling, the temperature sensor realizes it's not hot enough and it will increase the temperature. So control systems are used, they're ubiquitous. They're everywhere you're trying to control a process. They're in manufacturing, they're in water, they're in power plants, they're in refineries. By the way, our bodies use control systems to monitor, self-monitor our temperatures, our blood pressure, etc. All of your medical devices are effectively control systems. This is very ubiquitous, but what's happened is control systems were always designed for reliability, to work all the time and to work safely. The concept of security, or that somebody would maliciously want to do harm, was just not in the thought process of the people that were designing this. The people that were concerned with security or malicious intent really hadn't thought about this type of equipment. They were much more worried about data, or they were worried about physical security, somebody coming in with a gun or a grenade. So what you have here is this, if you will, two or three different cultures colliding, each of which, in a funny sense, was totally independent of the other. And unfortunately, they're all now coming together, and not coming together very smoothly. So we now have to figure out, how do we take this equipment that was never designed to try to keep people out? In fact, it was the opposite. It was designed to allow as many people as we could in. It was designed to be interoperable. And all of a sudden, now we've got to think about, how do we change this? That's very non-trivial.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about something that has to work, and it has to work all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's important. So this this executive order 13920, which is the number of it, it makes most, if not all, the components out of scope for compliance. What does this mean to our bulk power industry, and where and how will they find the in-scope products to meet their new requirements? It seems like if we're already required to get this stuff from overseas, we're behind the power curve trying to find replacement parts that would be compliant.
Again, very good questions, and also, bad pun, we're behind the power curve. What has happened, again, this goes back to the culture. You'll see the culture issue going throughout all of the discussions. Cybersecurity effectively started from, if you will, the information technology part of the world. Though the irony, the term cyber or cybernetics actually came originally from worrying about turbine governors. So you'd think, boy, this would be good, but cyber has taken on much, much more of an IT flavor. So what happened is the electric industry, which is, I think, the only industry anywhere that has actual formal cybersecurity requirements, had generated a set of cybersecurity requirements through the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, NERC. And the requirements are called the Critical Infrastructure Protection Standard, CIP, or right. I'll use the term SIP.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Those were developed by people from coming from either the physical security or the IT security part of the world. And they were not coming from the people who were coming from the substations or power plants. So these cybersecurity requirements were really not made to address this big equipment, okay, or the control systems. And in fact, here is where there is a clash between the NERC Critical Infrastructure Protection Standards, which addresses networks, and the executive order, which addresses the hardware equipment. And this is where the question you asked is actually backwards.
Okay.
Because what the executive order is doing is what we should have been doing from the past 20 years. We're worried about the equipment that keeps lights on and water flowing.
Right.
The way I'm trying to phrase it is a different way. The grid has been around for 100 years. It's only been the last 20 where you've had, if you will, these IT networks. The grid can work without networks. The internet cannot work without power. Yet all of the focus is on the internet.
Right, right.
This executive order is the first one that's actually going back and saying, no, worry about the equipment.
Right.
And in fact, it actually excludes all of that network equipment. Because one of the things that's in this executive order is a detailed list of all of the equipment and components that's in scope. And what it also says is if you're not in this list, you're out of scope.
Mm-hmm.
What's in that list? All of the network things. In other words, ironically, everything that NERC SIP is addressing is out of scope for the executive order, or the flip is what is in scope for the executive order is outside of scope for NERC SIP.
So
this is going to require some real, real, real thinking by an awful lot of, if you will, people who, you know, attorneys, et cetera, on trying to reconcile these conflicting set of requirements.
Yeah. Well, I've read some articles in the industry publications online that that they're, you know, they're scratching their head trying to figure out how to meet the requirements of this new executive order. But at the same time, it seems like, you know, and your voice on this has been a great education for all of us in the coalition, because I think you were one of the first ones to bring this issue up in one of our weekly calls. But it seems like if these guys would take their stuff offline and be standalone, independent, you know, outside of the internet of things, then they'd be okay. Is that right?
No.
No?
And I say that if you think about the Stuxnet situation in Iran, it turned out the Iranian centrifuge facility at Natanz was not connected to the internet.
Right, right.
Which is why, you know, people believe the way they got in was through the USBs.
Okay.
What is happening, and part of the reason for this executive order, and also part of the reason I believe the exclusion of all of this network equipment, is because there was, if you will, this term backdoors, electronic equipment that was installed in those transformers that allowed, in this case, the nation state to be able to bypass your normal networks and go directly, in this case, for example, back to China. Or potentially back to Russia, etc.
Right.
And so the point being, this is, in this case, this is independent of whether you are or are not connected to the internet.
Okay.
And this is why it is such a truly emergency executive order.
Okay. So I think you kind of alluded to it, but the next question on my mind is the threats from Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, you know, terrorist organizations. Have we had any recent attacks that were of note that we may not have heard about, that may not have been publicized quite so much because of all the other noise that's on the news channels?
Well, what happens is this, and I've written blogs about this in the past. When there is an IT cyber attack, or an IT cyber, well, in IT it's a cyber attack, that almost always makes the news once it's discovered. When it's a control system cyber event, it almost never makes the news.
That's because it's controlled by NERC and FERC, no?
No, not necessarily at all. Part of what people don't understand is we don't have control system cyber forensics.
Oh.
When you get below the internet protocol layer. So we don't have anything. You know, the movie Die Hard 4, I don't know how many people remember it. We don't have a control panel in our control room screaming cyber attack. Doesn't exist. There is no training today for the engineers that operate this equipment for cybersecurity anywhere. I actually had to develop, or I was under contract several years ago to the International Atomic Energy Agency. How do we do that? So part of this is, if it's not something that is occurring at the network layer, you don't know necessarily whether it's cyber or not. One of the differences is, if it's an IT cyber attack, you know it's a cyber attack. It may take you a while to find it, but you know. In the control system world, it's the opposite. If there's a control system event, you can't hide it. The lights go out, a train crashes, a pipe breaks, you know, a refinery flares. In other words, something physical has happened. A manufacturing line stops, you know, a robotic arm starts swinging. You can't hide that. What you don't know is if cyber played a role. A sophisticated cyber attacker will try to make a cyber attack look like a malfunction. Why? Because then the IT people aren't aware and the control system people aren't looking for a cyber attack.
Right.
That is effectively what Stuxnet did.
Okay.
It's effectively what Russia did when they tried to cyber attack the safety systems in a petrochemical plant in Saudi Arabia to blow it up.
I see. So, just as an aside, is there a market for this type of forensic analysis? Are the power companies, are they looking for that type of thing? Because if in case there's a listener out there that has, you know, some of these skills, maybe they could market themselves a little and get on the forefront of something big.
Well, you're absolutely right. And part of the problem is you could probably count on possibly several hands, the number of people who are actually capable of doing this.
Oh, wow.
Okay, because what this is not cybersecurity. This is what I've been dealing with all along. I told you my background. I'm a control system engineer, actually a nuclear engineer, that got into cybersecurity. So I have the knowledge of how the equipment works, or conversely, what doesn't make sense when things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have not only an understanding of cybersecurity, you have to have that understanding of the equipment. And the understanding of the equipment is probably more important.
Okay. All right.
And there, you know, part of what I'm doing, I happen to be an independent consultant. This is part of what I do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, and what I call it is, how do you train the trainer?
Yeah.
We don't have trainers today, or very few, who actually know and understand this. And going back to what you just asked, part of our problem is because NERC and the SIP process explicitly excluded these things, there was never, quote-unquote, a need. The
okay.
flip side is there was always the need.
Right.
It just wasn't recognized because this is why, and one of the biggest things about this executive order is it is going directly at the inadequacies of the NERC SIPs and the NERC supply chain requirements.
Yeah.
Because everything that occurred that stimulated the need for this executive order is outside the scope of
okay.
NERC.
All right. So in the last 2 minutes, how do or how should local distribution companies and even local water and sewer service providers, which rely on local power, how can they assure their equipment and their systems are free of these threats?
Very difficult. You know, number one, you need to find people who actually understand the equipment side, not just the cyber side. This pure cyber people won't find this. What happened that, again, that stimulated this were the engineers that were doing the site acceptance testing of this big equipment and found this, if you will, extraneous electronics there. So what's happening, this goes back to one of your earlier questions, and I'm going to end it with this too, is we don't have today all of the technology necessary to secure our equipment in any industry, whether it's electric, water, oil, gas, chemicals. Doesn't exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a combination of policies, procedures, training, and also governance. We're in this quote-unquote boat because the governance model is broken.
Yeah.
You've got people who don't understand the equipment, which is the IT side, responsible for securing equipment they don't know anything about.
Mm.
And that just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
And so until the governance model is fixed, and that's not just in industry, that's in government too. Until the governance model is fixed and you have the right people in charge and you have the right mix of people working on it, the technology is actually almost secondary.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a long, we have to limp along for a while before mm-hmm. we have the right equipment.
Okay.
And it's going to take some real heavy duty looking and understanding to find whether these back doors really do exist elsewhere. And my feeling is, knowing what has just been found, that I would be very, very, very surprised if these back doors aren't a lot more common than I think people would think they are, which is also why this executive order is so important.
Yes, and that's scary. And that has to be the last word. So, civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based, grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at our website at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def radio, where we post information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. Also, check out Civil Defense Radio podcast on YouTube. We are starting to upload our past episodes, and you can find them there if that's your preferred platform. I wish to thank Joe Weiss again for being on the show, and to thank you, our friends and listeners, who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.